chapter 2. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're starting a new series today called The Birth of Jesus, and we'll be looking at the birth narrative, both in Matthew's Gospel and in Luke's, through the eyes of different characters, different players in that story. Today we will be talking about King Herod, certainly a player in that story. Before we get to Matthew chapter 2, I want to do a little quiz with you all. We can go up to the next screen, and there's some important dates up there. These are days, according to Time Magazine, Time Online, that have changed the world. So I'm going to work through these and see how many of these that you can guess, all right? I think there's 8 of them up there. Maybe you can even have a little bit of a competition with those in the pew with you. And so November 22nd, 1963. Think about that. You don't need to shout it out loud, but just think about that. What happened on that date? That was, in fact, the assassination of JFK. How about July 20th, 1969? I'll give you a moment to think about that. So we landed on the moon. All right, September 11th, 2001. That's pretty recent history. I think we'll probably get that one right. The attack of the World Trade Center. December 7th, 1941. Attack on Pearl Harbor. Okay, good. I hear some murmuring out there. That's good. I think you guys are getting these pretty easily. April 4th, 1968. Assassination of MLK. January 28th, 1986. I quizzed my in-laws on this one, and this was one that took them a little bit longer to get. They still got it, but it took them a little bit longer. That's when the Challenger disaster occurred. And then October 29th, we're going to go way back to 1929. Right? Stock market. Woo, crashed. And then finally, November 9th, 1989. Tearing down of the Berlin Wall. All right, go ahead and raise your hand if you got all 8 of those. Don't boast, though. So, all right, everyone else is just humble. Okay, so there are like 2 that got them all. That's okay. Okay, these are dates that have changed the world. But what we're going to talk about over the next few weeks is the event in history, one that literally changed the world for all time, changed our lives. Changed the world today, changed the world 2,000 years ago. You think about this. Even when we talk about what year it is, right? 2014 AD. That date, 2014, that year, hinges on the birth of Jesus. A monk in the 6th century began what he called Anno Domini, which means in the year of our Lord, and it all rests on the birth of Jesus. And so even as we talk about the date, and we could say BC or BCE as they use now oftentimes, but still Christian era, the time of Christ. And so literally what we're talking about changed the world for all time. It is the reference date that we look at when we talk about dates. It changed everything. So let's get into this text, Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 6. We'll begin looking at this thing that changed the world. It says there, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. So Jesus' birthplace is Bethlehem. Bethlehem is an important place. It was an important place for the Jews. Jacob buried Rachel there. It's where Ruth met Boaz. It was David's childhood home. And now it's the birthplace of the Messiah. So a very important place for God's people. We're told by Matthew in Matthew chapter 2, we can go back a screen. I didn't finish up 1 through 6. Let me finish it up. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. So that's the rest of verses 1 through 6. Matthew tells us that Magi came to see Jesus. Now these Magi, some translations have that they are wise men. Either translation, Magi, wise men. Either one of those will work. These Magi were people who perhaps interpreted dreams. They may have specialized in astrology. It's likely that they were very wealthy people. For one, they were able to travel a very long distance to come to see Jesus. Also, we know based on the gifts that they offered to Jesus, that we'll look at here in a little bit, that they were very wealthy people. Now, we need to get this because a song might mislead us a little bit. Matthew doesn't tell us how many Magi there actually were. We're told that they gave three gifts, but that doesn't necessitate that there were three men. So there may have been a whole large group of Magi that came to see Jesus. Matthew tells us that they came from the east to see Jesus. We don't know where exactly they came from. Some area of Persia, perhaps. But they were told that they traveled a great distance. They could have even traveled thousands of miles. If you think about the east from where these events are taking place in Bethlehem, it could have been even several thousand miles that they traveled. When did they start traveling? When did they decide that this is what they needed to do? We're not told that in the text, but we're told that they were from the east. It says that they saw a star. Now, we have to ask the question, how did they know that this star meant that Jesus was born? How did they know to follow this star? Did they receive some sort of direct message from God about Jesus? Had they in some way interacted with the Hebrew Bible and connected some dots about that? Did they use their astrology training to help them with this? Some scholars have conjectured that the star came through some conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars in 6 BC, which was some sort of astrological phenomenon. We don't know for sure, but they saw that star and they followed it to Bethlehem. Herod, upon hearing from the Magi, was very disturbed. And we're also told that all of Jerusalem was disturbed along with Herod. Herod was not the rightful heir to David's throne. He was put into that position by Rome. It's likely that he was partly Jewish, but not completely a Jew. He descended from the line of Esau and not Jacob. He was hated. This is what Josephus and others have said, that he was actually hated by the Jewish people, by his own people. But in order to sort of help his politics a little bit, he spent a great deal of money and resources with building projects in Jerusalem and the surrounding area. In particular, the temple was built, a great temple, an architectural, just beautiful thing. And so he was at work trying to make good with the people, even though he was hated. He was a ruthless person. One person said that it would be better to be one of Herod's pigs than one of his sons. He's known to have killed several of his family members, including one of his wives, because he felt threatened by them. And so it's no wonder that he's going to feel threatened from the Messiah that is on the scene now. He felt threatened by all people. He was always afraid of losing his political power. And that's part of being under the Roman control as well, is to feel threatened very easily. But that's Herod. We have to ask the question, why was all Jerusalem disturbed? Perhaps it's because they understood who they were dealing with Herod. And so Herod is always feeling threatened. He has no problem killing his friends and family members. And so if Herod catches word that there's a new king on the scene, what is he going to do? Who is he going to kill? there's people just were very uncertain about Herod's actions. And so this may have caused this an opportunity for those people in Jerusalem to be very nervous. What is Herod going to do next based on this new information? And Matthew says that Micah had prophesied about Jesus coming out of Bethlehem. We have to note this, that Matthew, really throughout his whole gospel, but in particular the birth narrative, takes great effort to point out how Jesus coming into the world, God coming to the world through Jesus, is the fulfillment of prophecy. This was God's plan all along, and Matthew's going to take great effort to show us that that is the case. And so several times as we look at Matthew chapter 2, we'll see Matthew pointing to the prophets saying that the Messiah was coming. Okay, so that's verses 1 through 6. I know we're moving through this quickly. Let's go on to verses 7 and 8, Matthew chapter 2. It says there, then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. So Herod finds out about Jesus, where he's going to be, and he says, so that I can go and worship him, or as some translations say, so that I can go pay homage to him. Now, knowing Herod's character, it's likely that even at this point, he's not talking about actually going to worship him, knowing that he would be threatened by him. But that's what he says to these Magi at this point. Verses 9 through 12 now. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So the Magi go to Bethlehem, and they worship Jesus. They pay homage to him, again, as some translations say. It says that they offered gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Some scholars have seen that there's significance to the gifts that are given, but for our purposes today, we'll say that these are gifts that are fit for a king. It would take a wealthy person to acquire these kinds of gifts to offer to Jesus. And so imagine these Magi's actions are exemplary. They travel a long distance to come and see Jesus. They're faithful in following the star to the birthplace of Jesus, and then once they're there, they worship him and they offer these gifts. You have to wonder if there's some foreshadowing that's taking place through the Magi's actions. These Magi were not Jewish people, being from far to the east. So these Gentiles come, they recognize who Jesus is, and they recognize the appropriate response when they see Jesus. They worship him. The gospel is for all. Verse 12 says that the Magi were warned in a dream not to go back to Herod. One thing we see also in this text, several times God is active in communicating to his people. So he communicates through a dream to the Magi. He's communicating to Joseph about the actions that they're to take. And so God is at work in this story. Verses 13 through 15. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said. Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. So Joseph takes his family down to Egypt, which was about 75 miles west and a little bit south of Bethlehem. Egypt was a place of safety for the Israelites during political conflict. So it's not surprising that they went to Egypt. There were likely colonies of Jews in Egypt at this time. And so maybe there was a safe haven there surrounded by their own people. And of course, Matthew, in his typical fashion, mentions that this is a fulfillment of Hosea's prophecy. This has been the plan all along. Notice that. It's been the plan all along. It says, out of Egypt I called my son. Now, God called his people out of Egypt in that time we call the Exodus, right? They were in bondage there under the Pharaoh and his people. God called them out of Egypt to a new land. Now, through this Messiah, God is going to call his people out of bondage. But this time, it's going to be the bondage of sin. It's been the plan all along. Verses 16 through 18. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. The story of Jesus' birth is no blue skies and rainbows. We want it to be that way. And we look at the nativity scenes from time to time, and it seems that way. But the truth of the matter is that this was a tumultuous time. There was a political ruler at this time that was disturbed, and more than that, feeling threatened, was angry about what was taking place. And so he says, I will wipe out the boys that are 2 years old and under. So although this is a great time of joy, it's also, as Jeremiah had prophesied, also a time of weeping. Now, Bethlehem was not a very large town. And so it's likely that there were only about 20, 25 boys that were killed if Bethlehem was a town of about 1,000 people. So we're not talking about 1,000 boys that were killed, but still, in this story, 20 young boys were killed by an angry ruler. It's a reminder to us that this takes place. I think a reminder that we can take from this anyways is that Jesus was born into a tumultuous time, and he was, in some ways, this story is scandalous, right? His birth changed everything. You see a king get jealous and angry about this boy coming into the world. At this point, it's not a perfect world. And of course, we read the news today. We see what's taking place up near St. Louis and Ferguson. We know what's taking place right now in the Middle East with ISIS and other conflicts that are going on. And we see this is not a perfect world. The world that Jesus was born into was certainly not a perfect world. But we know that Jesus, fully God, fully human, is King of Kings. And through his life, through his actions, we can find hope and salvation. And we have a message of salvation to give to a broken world that needs the message so badly. Herod was threatened by Jesus, who at this time, think about who he's threatened by. He's threatened by a little baby boy in a little town that was born in a manger. His anger moved him to killing a bunch of children. And we wonder, why was he threatened? Why did he act in this way? I believe it's because he sat on the throne. He had all power and all control. And now, because of this one who was born in Bethlehem, just down the road, he believed it was in jeopardy. His throne was in jeopardy. So I've got this chair here. I'm going to set it up here for just a moment. You might have been wondering where this chair had gone. It was in the foyer. Okay, I'm going to set it right here. This would actually be a great way to preach, to sit down. It'd be so much more comfortable. Everyone else gets to sit down. So for a moment, I want this chair to represent Herod's reign. Herod was the one on the throne in Jerusalem. Of course, he was kind of underneath Rome too, but he was the one I was on the throne. He is the one who had all power. He's the one that had the control. The buck stopped with him. And then just a few miles away from where he was sitting on the throne, a little baby boy was born. And he had found out from the Magi, he had found out from the chief priests and the teachers of the law and all of Jerusalem, really, that the Messiah was now here. He was born in Bethlehem. And all of a sudden, he felt threatened. He thought his spot on the throne was in jeopardy. So what was he going to do? The truth of the matter was that the King of Kings had been born. The King of Kings. The true ruler. The one who had been king, really, before even the beginning of time. Jesus came as the King who was fully God and fully human. In chapter 1, Matthew says that this is God with us, Emmanuel. And because he's fully God and fully human, because he was born in a manger in Bethlehem, he knows us. He's walked this planet. He's shed the tears. He's felt the emotion. He's the perfect King. But he's also challenging. Fully God, fully human, but he's challenging to all of us. All Jerusalem was disturbed along with Herod. Shouldn't have Jerusalem been rejoicing at this time? The Messiah is here. The one that Jeremiah, Hosea, and Micah have talked about is here. Instead, what Matthew tells us is that they were disturbed. And as you read through Matthew's gospel, you see they don't stop being disturbed by him. Instead of giving their lives to him, many said, no, he's not the one for us. They missed it. All of us are challenged by Jesus Christ, the King of Kings. Like Herod, who has a throne, the truth of the matter for all of us is that we like to have the spot on the throne. You see, all of us like to have the power. We like to have control. We like to know that we are setting our steps. We are making the decisions to guide our life. And so we just like to have that spot. But the truth of the matter is the one that was born in Bethlehem, King of Kings, is the only one to sit on this throne. It's his throne, not ours. He's the King of Kings. Of course, he's the one that's prophesied about. He's been part of God's plan all along. God is in control. When we look at the manger, we're reminded of that truth. From the beginning of time, God has had a plan for his Messiah to come. His name is Jesus, the true King. You think about the Magi's response compared to Herod's response. Here the Magi were from a long distance away, likely Gentiles. And yet they come and worship him. And Herod, living just a few miles away from where Jesus was born, just simply feels threatened by him. The king was down the road from him, and he missed it. The truth of the matter for all of us today is the king is in our midst. He's on the throne. Will we bow before him like the Magi, and offer him a gift, our very lives? Or will we be like Herod, feel threatened, not willing to give up the power control that we have in our lives, or we think we have in our lives? What will we do? Will we give over our lives to him? Will we give him the spot on the throne? He's the only rightful person to that spot. If there's anybody here today that needs the prayers of this assembly, we'd be so glad to pray with you or for you. We truthfully believe that we are in this journey together, and because of that, we walk alongside each other, bearing each other's burdens, sharing our lives with one another. So if there's anybody here that would like to share what's going on with their life, we'd be honored, privileged to pray with you or for you. If there's anybody here today that is ready to put your Lord on in baptism, today would be a great day to do that. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and sing together.